The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
When Michael Harding turned 70, he decided to walk a short Camino de Santiago from Sarrio to Santiago. It was around the same time that somebody mentioned to Michael that he looked like his father. And this caused Michael to reflect on his father while completing the pilgrimage. And this reflection is featured in his new memoir, I Loved Him From the Day He Died, subtitled My Father, Forgiveness and a Final Pilgrimage. And Michael joins me now. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
So when did you start looking like your father, do you think?
I don't know. Maybe I started looking like him, you know, when I was born. You know, the way people say you're like your father.
Yeah, and sometimes it changes me throughout your childhood.
Yeah,
you look a bit like your mother now. You know, that kind of
thing. That's right. But my father, because he was about 50 when he married, so he was an old man. In those days, the 60s was elderly. And so he was an old man when I was just about 10 years of age. And all I remember is an old man. And he was very aloof. You know, he lived in his own space in a room reading his books, sitting under the standard lamp on an armchair. And that was his life. And so when he came to get ill in the last few years of his life, I began to see him in the hospital, and he'd have his hands on the cot sides of the bed, and his arms were like chicken wings. They were so thin and frail, they frightened me. And they were white. There was no evidence that he ever saw sunlight in his life. It was a white, little, frail old man's body. And he was confused from tablets. And all that was quite traumatizing for somebody that I was about 21 or 20 at the time. So that's the father I remember. And 50 years after he died, somebody says to you, joking, you know, I can see, an old man he was, he said, I can see your father in you.
But,
and I looked in the mirror and I saw him. I said, the old wrinkles, the grey hair, just the elderly face that begins to express itself. You realise that you're not that individual that you think. You're not a special, and that every generation comes in waves. And your father and grandfather, your mother and grandmother, they were all like waves of the sea. And you're here, and you, 90% of your whole shape and body and frame and mental attitude, I think, is simply reflective of a pattern in your family.
Well, your father died when you were young, as you say, 22.
Yeah.
And you say, although you were an adult, you weren't adult enough really to have an adult conversation with him at that time.
No, because I had gone away to, I'd gone away to college, we'll say when I was at 17 or 18. So I didn't know him really when I was maturing. I didn't know him when I was having a child, when I was getting married, when all the things in life happened that you want to go back to your parent and say, what was it like when you got married? What was it like when you had a child? You couldn't ask him because he wasn't there. And there was so much of his life then that I felt I didn't know. So he was just a kind of a mysterious presence.
I mean, you knew him as an older, sicker man.
Yeah.
And your pals' dads were rather the opposite because they were more typically married younger.
They were almost a generation younger, some of them. And so people would have fathers that were playing football. You know, that were on the county team, that were on the local club in the GAA. People would talk about their fathers being out in the pub at night and being a great singer. And when I went to West Cavan, and I lived there for a while as a teacher, and I used to be kind of in awe of the men. I loved the masculinity of these guys who were in their 50s and 60s. And they were abrasive, and they would do recitations, and they would sing songs, and they'd talk about the troubles in the north. Yeah. And they were like heroes, you know.
And your memory of your father is of a reclusive man.
Just sitting there alone.
Yeah.
And also, I suppose that he was, in those days, authoritative in a way that was fairly forbidding, you know. It was kind of like they carried over Edwardian culture. You know, he always dressed in a suit. To me, he was a grey-haired man in a grey suit. That's basically what he was.
But surrounded by his books or listening to the radio or reading his newspaper, I mean,
happy,
this resonates with me completely.
Yeah.
Thinking of my father, that's what he liked to do.
Happy as Larry.
My father used to be able to listen to the radio, read a newspaper and watch television at the same time.
Yeah. Well, my father, he wouldn't watch the television at the same time, but he'd only appear in the television room. The television was in the dining room. And life went on in the dining room. And he was in the other room. You'd nearly knock on the door going into him. But sometimes he would come in and he'd say, is it 8 o'clock yet? And it'd be for Panorama on Tuesday evenings on BBC. We had BBC before, you know, in the north, in Cavan, we always got BBC from the 50s. But he'd come in for the old Mr. Dimbleby on BBC Panorama, and he'd watch it for the 60 minutes or whatever, and he'd rise and retreat to his own room.
Your mother was much more gregarious and outgoing.
She was,
You say that she was a storyteller. So you got the literary bit from your dad, but the storytelling really from your mother.
I think that, like, my mother worked in the Metropole Hotel in Cork, and she was very gregarious, and she loved dancing. And I think that, you know, I always say that because there was a certain guy in Cavan who was in Diggs, as they called it at the time, and he was a famous dancer. He was a beautiful dancer in the dance halls. And my father was in the same Diggs. And I think that she thought that dancing was contagious and that my father would pick up good dancing by osmosis. And when she married him, she realised he danced like a donkey. He absolutely could not dance. Now, my mother, I danced with my mother up until she was in her late 80s. If I was at a golf club dinner or something, she'd really want you to give her a dance, even at that age. And she was a beautiful dancer. But my father was so
that,
different.
The lack of that throughout
so
her
different.
Life must have been...
Oh yeah,
a sense of loss in some ways,
and I think that both men and women in our fathers and mothers' generation, they endured disappointments in marriage that didn't get spoken of, you know, that small disappointments that, you know, didn't spoil the marriage, but people had a better realization that many of the things that you expect to turn out perfect with the partner won't turn out so perfect. And you might have to make do to some extent to accommodate your life to what is possible. And I do think that my parents were like that. And one of the treasured memories I have is in his old age, and he was quite feeble and he'd be lying in the bed in the mornings. I might come back to the house. I was in Dublin at the time studying, but I'd go upstairs and I would find him resting on the bed, looking out the window, and her sitting on the bed beside him and the two of them holding hands. And it was an image like of teenagers. And it felt like they had achieved a kind of a beautiful intimacy at the very end of his life.
You know, you never knew him as a young man. Did you ever find traces of him, though? You know, when he was vibrant and vigorous before he became ill and old and enfeebled. Did you find traces of him talking to other people? Maybe older men who remember him in his pomp?
People would talk about how way back in the 30s and 40s, in the 40s rather, that he was a great light in the Cavan Drama Society, and that he would do great recitations, and he would do kind of satiristic ridicules. He would do a kind of a speech which would ridicule Hitler at the time. So there was all this kind of performance artist, this singer of songs, this wonderful person, but it didn't exist for me. It was like when people told me, usually after his death, which is, again, a funny thing that happens, it's when somebody passes away that people will shake your hand and say, oh, I remember your father, we used to do such and such together.
Well, he was a great man for this.
Yeah, and you're saying, I never heard that before.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, the title of your book, I Loved Him From the Day He Died, is an extraordinary title.
Yeah. It's a beautiful line that I got from a poem by Michael Hartnett. And the poem was, I think it's an Irish grandmother and an Irish mother. I think I've said that wrong somewhere. But it's a poem that was out in a book by Michael Hartnett around the time my father died. And so I read the poem and was deeply moved by it, even though it was about his mother or grandmother.
Yeah.
But the line he had in it was, and he had other beautiful lines, like, she was like a child's purse full of useless things. It's a beautiful line. And the final punch in it for me was, I loved her from the day she died. And I felt for my father that was exactly the title, because it's like when somebody dies, you're 22, you think just you're traumatised. He's an old person, he's nothing to do with you. And yet over 40 years of your own life, you realise you're growing into the same mould. And in that sense, it's like he's a ghost coming back to you. and you see him in the mirror.
You describe this as your last pilgrimage. I mean, you're not enfeebled yourself as yet, although you've had your brushes with mortality, as you and I have discussed before.
Yeah, no, I'm in great health, thank God. But I was in Beaumont. I had two operations that affected the spine, and the mobility became in jeopardy. And it was really because of that that I wanted to do the Camino. I just wanted to do a short Camino to celebrate the fact that I could actually walk. Okay. As simple as that. And so I didn't intend to do a book about my father. I told my publisher I was going to do a book about the Camino. But the minute I got into the Camino, it was like, and this happens, I think, with life sometimes. Somebody comes back to you that you haven't thought of for years. And suddenly it's like they're in the room with you. And my father was like this strange presence that accompanied me on the whole journey. And again, probably because he did have an interest in writing. He did write for the Irish Press. He used to write reviews for David Marcus. And funny enough, David Marcus was the person who told me when I first began writing novels, he said, you need to call yourself Michael P. Harding, which I did in those days. Because he said, your father is well known as a reviewer of books. So there was a funny connection that my father was a writer, even though he was never able to be a full-time writer. And I think that in a kind of a silent way, he did give me space as a teenager to pursue writing. If I wrote a poem when I was young and I showed it to him, and sometimes there would be very confessional lines in my poetry, as you know, juvenilia, and lines maybe that would be very negative about your childhood and your adolescence. And he would look at it and he'd say, very good. Now he'd say, keep going. You know, he always approved of writing.
Yeah. You say you know, many people do, and you could have written an angry book maybe about your father.
Yeah,
I think this is more an elegy.
Do you know something? It's very true, because I think that at earlier stages in my life, when I didn't write about my father, it's possible that I would have written an angry book like, where were you? You know, how you let me down.
Yeah, you weren't actually there playing football with me like the other dads.
Exactly.
You weren't.
Yeah. I'm disabled because of you. And that causality, maybe it's true, but the strange thing is you go through phases in life. And if you do get wisdom as you get older, you get a kind of an equanimity that allows you to write an elegy rather than a rant. Yeah.
You also say you regret the too many years you spent alone and melancholic.
Yeah. Well, I say that a little bit with tongue in cheek. It's the way that one has to say it as a writer. Like, if you've spent your life hours and hours alone in a room writing in front of a screen, you do have to sort of have the common sense to say, maybe I shouldn't be at this. Maybe I should be spending more time socialising and playing.
There's something a bit maybe more depressing in the modern era. Instead of sitting with your pen or quill, looking out at the mountains and writing a manuscript, you're sitting in front of a screen.
Yeah. It really, and it was Yeats that said somewhere, he said, you must choose either the work or the life. That it always will be a sacrifice. And maybe this is a very important point for me to realise, in some sense, that writing is not important. You know, the one mistake I think you can make as a writer is to think you're important, or that you're saying, you know, that you're shifting the mountains.
Yeah.
You're not really. You're not really. No matter how profoundly wonderful you are. And what's much more important always is the person you meet when you walk out the door, your children or your partner or your friends, and you love
sometimes
them.
Sometimes shifting mountains in the minds of your readers on an individual basis.
And that's an accidental thing that a text can have, and that's fine. Let it go. It's only a story. I didn't know it was so good, you know. And also, I do follow John B. Keane's principle that I write with my ears, so I'm only passing on stories. And I also...
This is Maeve Binchy's, we talked about Maeve last week.
Well, there you go, yeah.
She wrote with her ears.
And John B. Keane was the same. But the other way that I get out of the solitude is by actually... I love these times when I'm on the radio or when I'm launching the book. I'll be in Hodges Fidges, I think, tonight. But then I go on a tour after Christmas. So I try to balance the solitude of writing with this kind of period when a book is published. I try and just interact with people and just, I don't know, love them and listen to them and have a bit of fun with
and
them.
And have a dance whenever you can.
Yes, yeah, I'd go for that.
The reflections on the Camino itself, though, I mean, you didn't write a travel book quite obviously.
No.
Did you enjoy the experience?
I loved the experience. And I think that there are things in the book that, in a kind of a subtle way, are a meditation on the kind of, let's say, ontological template of fatherhood. That in some sense, looking for my father is also a kind of a way of resolving the sense of what is this remote idea of God? You know, like when institutional religion crumbles and falls away as it is doing, we'll still have this big philosophical question. What's the ground of being? What's the nature of the Godhead? And in that sense, the template of fatherhood will still be there as something to reflect on. Well, and how do you resolve yourself?
It's the mystery that science doesn't answer of the life force.
Yeah. And nobody does.
Nobody does. Michael, it's a wonderful book. I Loved Him From the Day He Died, subtitled My Father, Forgiveness and a Final Pilgrimage. It's published by Hachette, and Michael Harding, its author, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Today.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.